Hello, nice to have you back and welcome to Minbar. Over the last 30 to 40 years, Islam has been spreading in the Western world, first in the US, and now it is rapidly gaining ground in Europe as well. Some skeptics say that people who become Muslim do so because of various negative factors. For example, they belong to marginalized groups in society, that they might have had negative experiences with the society they live in, or that, from a Christian point of view, they did not experience the love of Christ. Is this a reality? Is this true? Do the tens of thousands of people who become Muslims every year all become Muslims purely out of negative factors? Well, to get to the bottom of this question, we have two guests on our program. First, Paula Bahmanpour, a native of Finland, a convert to Islam, and at the present moment, a chairperson of the Risalat Islamic Society in Helsinki. Let's hear Paula Bahmanpour. Sister Paula, welcome to Minbar.
Thank you.
First of all, I think most of our audience would love to know, and I'm sure you've heard this a million times, how did you become a Muslim?
Yes. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. I became Muslim 30 years ago. It's a long time. And when I was 15 years old, I became interested in religion. And we have in Finland, it's a Lutheran church, and they organized very many different programs for youth and for youngsters, and I joined some of those, and we went there reading Bible and like that. But I wasn't comfortable. I didn't get the answers I wanted, and then I left the religion. And then when I got accepted to university, I thought I'd go for 4 months to England, and I took my Bible with me. Of course, that time I wasn't a religious person. I don't come from a religious family. In there I was alone, and I met lots of foreigners, and I met some Shia people and talk about Islam. And I was thinking, what is this? I didn't know anything about Islam when I was in my country. I regret many things in my life, but never this.
Now, one could say that many religions have a concept of the oneness of God. Christians say that God is one. Hindus have the concept of Brahman, which is also a one God. There have been many philosophical schools of thought. Aristotelianism also talks about the prime mover and that type of thing. What is so unique about this Tawheed, this oneness of God according to Islam, that you found most particularly attractive?
I think it is I like to think that all the attributes that what we give to God, that how he is everything and how we can get close to him, how he is all powerful. You know, he doesn't need any assistant. He doesn't need Jesus to forgive our sins. He can do it himself. And it was this his magnificence, what he has, all his powers, what he has.
Right.
It was this.
I understand. Now, a lot of converts have had problems with their families or their friends and so forth after they have converted, you know. A lot of them, you know, say, for example, that, you know, you don't know what you're doing, or you are betraying your culture and different types of. Did you have any kind of negative feedback from your family?
Yes, of course. I'm not an exception for that. The time I lived in Finland, but when I converted to Islam, I was in London, and I just told my family that I had become Muslim. They didn't know anything about Islam because, as I told you, I myself didn't know either. There wasn't anything in the media. There weren't any Muslims in Finland. It's a very quiet country and far from the troubles and politics of the other side of the world. And when the Islamic revolution in Iran happened, then of course the newspapers, the television, it was full of this, what is this revolution about? And then my parents said, what is this? Do you really think like that? It was two years after my conversion. And they said, do you really think like this? And what is this? And they started asking, and they became very angry to me. And then for 5 years they didn't want to see me, and it was very hard, because when you lose all your friends, your family, you need support. When you convert, you need support. So I had nobody. Then I had got married with a Muslim man. He was the only support I had. And I was very lonely with this, you know. I had to learn everything from the beginning, and you know, all the previous life ended, and I opened a new page. And even this is hard. And then lose your parents, and it was very hard for me. All the time I had to be explaining to them and like that. Then it slowly they started, you know. I can't say that they started accepting it, but they started to accept the idea that I will not change anymore, mm-hmm. that this is what I am. And then the blood drew, I think, that they said that, okay, however you are, we you know, you are our daughter still. But I can still see it after so many years, 30 years. Now, last spring, my mother was very sick and in the hospital, and I went to see her with my children and with my husband. And there my husband asked her, because we thought that she was really, really ill, that, mother, do you, have you forgiven me? Do you accept me? My husband asked. And my mother said something. She said that, look, you, she said to my husband, that I have always accepted you. You were born like that. This is your way of life. But I cannot accept that Paula changed her life and became a Muslim and raised her children as Muslims. Mm-hmm. So it was really, I felt so upset. I said that still she cannot forgive me. You know, it is really right. This, that turning your back to the culture, to the values, it really hurts the right. Muslim people. I have seen two things in this. When I am in Finland, the Finnish people, they don't give me bad remarks or anything like that. But they don't become friends with me. Mm. They don't talk to me first. If I don't make the initiative, they don't come to me. Mm. But when I take the initiative, they become curious.
Right.
And another thing is that when I deal with the officials and authorities, they are very relieved that there is a native Finnish speaking who understands our culture and system, who comes and talks about them. Issues of the Islamic community with them. Mm-hmm. So in one way, you know, I can promote the life, you know, the or to work for the Islamic community. But on the other way, I have to, you know, I give it up from my personal life.
Mm-hmm. It seems from what you're saying that your mother's reaction is a typical reaction by mm-hmm. many people in the West with respect to their views on Islam, that Islam is something alien, mm. they see, to one's national character. And that when one becomes a Muslim, one no longer is, I don't know, British or American. Mm-hmm. You know, one becomes mm-hmm. something else. One becomes a Middle Easterner, one becomes an Arab, one becomes something else but a Finn, you know, something else but an American. Mm. You know, it seems that that is the kind of experience that you have had. In your opinion, is this correct? Do you feel any less Finnish by being a Muslim?
No, I don't think so. I'm not. And I think this applies also to the children of the immigrants who have born in Finland. Or in any country, in the immigrants' children who are born in, and they have grown up in that country. The other day I talked to a Somali girl, and she asked me, where am I from? Am I Finnish? I said, yes. And I said, where are you from? She said, I'm Somali. I said, no, you are not. You are Finnish. Hmm. How long have you lived in Somali? She said, that 3 months. How long have you lived in Finland? She said, 13 years. I said, how can you be Somali? You are not. You are Finnish. And especially when we want to talk with the authorities or anyone, we want to emphasize that we are Finnish Muslims. Mm-hmm. We are not we are not foreigners.
Right.
You know, we want our rights as Finnish citizens. Mm-hmm. Or in any other country the same. They should consider themselves as citizens of that country. But the problem is with these people, that the first generation people, because in Finland we have just the first, only 20 years something there have been Muslims. they themselves haven't decided yet whether they want to stay or go back. Right. Many of our immigrants, they come from war-stricken countries, and they're all the time waiting for the things to get better. But as history has shown, you know, then things don't get better in one decade or two.
Right.
So I think they should, you know, forget this, that they will, you know, they will not decide that where are they going to stay. They should think that I'll stay here. I grow up my children here. I learn the language. I learn the habits. I learn the system. But be a Muslim. You don't compromise with that.
Right, right. Now, what's your, let's say, family background? I'm asking this question because, as we had said earlier on in the program, some people think that people become Muslims because they find themselves marginalized in society first, you know, or they come from lower levels of society, more deprived levels of society, you know, so they are somewhat alienated from society, and therefore they find Islam as an alternative.
Yeah.
You know, could that describe you?
No, I don't think so, because I come from an ordinary Finnish family. Both my parents were working. I had a very happy childhood. I did not come from a broken family. We were a very close family. I had very good relation with both of my parents, with my brother, with my sister. I have had never problems at home, never problems as a teenager. I have had always a very good home, and I'm very stable, no fightings and bad things, you know, very normal life. Mm-hmm. I went to the private school. Those days we had private schools in Finland. And in Finland there are not poor people like that, you know. Of course there are with little bit lower income, but you know, we have a system that everybody is looked after.
You have a sort of a social security
social welfare system. Yes.
Yes. Are there a lot of Finns becoming Muslims?
We have some. There are about, the government officials say that at the moment there are about 40,000 Muslims in Finland. There is a little more because the number is growing very fast. The Muslims are, they get married very soon, and they usually, or many of them, get their spouses from from their countries.
Right.
So they even increase in that way. Mm. And then they have lots of children. We have very good child benefit system. Mm. The mothers can stay home with salaries until the child is 3 years old. Mm. So it's very good. Muslims have big, big families, 7, 8 children. Mm-hmm. And
how can I emigrate to Finland?
Yes, welcome. And and we have lots of young people. The first Muslims came to Finland in 1850s. There were some traders from Russia, from Kazan, Tatars. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then they settled there down. And they formed an ethnic group. Mm-hmm. They were Muslims. But that time it was only we had the state church, Lutheran church, and no other religions were recognized. But then when we got our independence, and shortly after the independence came the law of freedom of religion. And then the other religions could also officially register and be recognized. So then those Tatars also, they got registered. And in fact, they are the oldest Muslim recognized and registered community in Europe. But they are very close because they observe their own culture and language.
Right.
So of course their mosque, you can go to their mosque to pray, but they don't have other kinds of programs only for themselves, those who speak their language. Mm-hmm. They are about 700. Mm-hmm. And they are very well off, they are very educated, they are very rich. The community has got very big building in the center of Helsinki, they have their own cemetery. They are very well off and very educated people. They are all lawyers and things like that. And they are very integrated into, when you see them in the streets, you don't recognize them. Just from the name, you can probably see they have.
What about the local Finns themselves? Those local Finns who become Muslim, what kind of class background do they come from? What kind of levels of society do they come from? Do they all seem like you, for example?
No, they come from all sorts of backgrounds. Mm-hmm. There are, you know, single girls, young girls. We have in our community a 12-year. She was 12 years when she converted.
Wow.
Now she's 23, I think, or something, and she's married, and she's studying, and she's got three children. And she just, and this is very important, she was just at school, she met with Muslim children. And she asked, why you do like this? What is this? And, you know, became interested.
Yeah.
And she converted.
At 12?
So, yeah. Uh-huh. And I think this is another thing, it's very important that we are living in the society. We don't get isolated.
Right.
Because this is the influence we will have.
Right. Mm. Right.
We have also Sunni Muslims converted to Shias. Uh-huh. And we have all kinds of, we have office workers, we have ordinary, what is it called, workers who labor work. All kinds of people.
So it crosses over all classes.
Yes,
so
it
one
does.
Can't say that Muslims come from one particular class.
No.
There are
we have educated people with the academic education.
When you become Muslim, do you find any problems with your role in society? Do you find yourself, or do you marginalize yourself from society? Do you say to yourself, well, okay, Finnish society is non-Islamic and therefore I cannot participate in it?
No, I am against that. Uh-huh. I think that, you know, I think that we Muslims, we should make a clear line and policy for us that how we want to live as minorities. Mm-hmm. Do we want to get marginalized, isolated, or do we want to be active participants? For example, I tell you, in Finland, the educational system, there is religious education. But if you are Muslim or you are Buddhist, you are allowed to have your own religious instruction in the school. Mm-hmm. You get a Muslim teacher to teach you Islam.
Right.
Okay, so this is very good. So why should we have and you don't have to go to learn Christianity. Mm-hmm. And for example, the schools provide lunch. So if you don't want to eat the meat,
right,
you can have vegetarian choice.
Right.
And it's no question, it's your right to have it.
Right.
And then the Muslim girls and boys, they don't have to, if they don't want to participate in the swimming, because swimming pools are mixed.
Right.
If you don't want to do that, then you can do something else, some other exercise which doesn't require
the swimming.
Yes. Uh-huh. So we have very good. Our government, it has, you know, really wants us to be comfortable in the society, and I think that as long as we have this, our children, our girls go to the school with hijab.
Right.
It's no problem. Uh-huh. Nobody has the right to question their hijab.
Yes.
It's their right. So why should we isolate ourselves in our own nurseries and our own schools? Mm-hmm. We can strengthen our centers and our mosques and educate the mothers to teach at home for their children, and teach the children in the centers, make nice programs for them to learn the Islam. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of your relationship with the Finnish population, is the population warming towards Islam? Do you feel, experience any of the kind of Islamophobia that is you find happening, for example, in other countries, like in some parts of France, for example, some parts of the U.S. and so on? Do you find any kind of Islamophobia being expressed in Finland against Muslims?
The Muslim community is very new. You know, I told you about the Tatars.
Right.
Then the new Muslims came to Finland about the 1990s. It was a wave, a big wave. A lot of refugees came from Somalia, and then from Iraq and from Afghanistan due to this persecution, what they had there.
So
yes. And so the government and the officials, they didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. Because we didn't have any system how to teach Finnish language to the foreigners. Mm-hmm. Because we had never had so many foreigners in Nuanco. And it was a big problem in the beginning. And of course now, you know, when the children who are they came young or when they were born there, they learned the language, so it's easier with them.
Right.
But older people is always always a problem. But I think they will, you know.
So they don't have the kind of negative reactions to Islam.
There is a lot of ignorance. This is what I want to say. There's a lot of people don't know anything. That's why the officials, they are very happy to when we go to and tell them what we want.
Right.
What is our needs? What are our ways? Mm-hmm. Because now, for example, if one person goes and says that I'm a Muslim, I want like this. One goes, I'm a Muslim, I should do like this. So the officials don't know themselves what to do because mm-hmm. many of the Muslims, they then mixture their own culture to the Islam.
With Islam. Uh-huh.
And then that gives a very confused idea for the authorities.
Right.
So what we have done now, we have had a lot of cooperation with the Shias and Sunnis and with all the different mosques.
Mm-hmm.
Because of course we have lots of mosques. We have like the mosque where they speak Turkish, where they speak Somali, where they speak Arabic, where they speak Urdu, and then our mosque also. So there are so many different languages because we don't yet have that generation that we would have one common language.
Right.
So now what we have done that we have formed an Islamic Council of Finland. The government has again helped us to informing this,
mm-hmm.
and in that this will be a partner with deals with all these, for example, school boards and healthcare and like that,
right,
to solve the common problems of the Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
So this is very uniting fact. It's a very good and it's working. It has now, it's less than a year we started that. I'm also a member in this board. And then we have formed, for example, we have problem with the graveyard. We don't have Islamic graveyard.
Right.
We don't know where to bury our dead.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have negotiated with the churches because the graveyards are with them. We have negotiated with the different authorities to solve this problem, and
right.
we are getting results.
Uh-huh. So you're gonna have a Muslim graveyard.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Now we just don't know where to find the land, and so that the location would serve as many people as possible. Mm. And
thank you very much, Sister Bahmanpour, Sister Paula Bahmanpour. That was Paula Bahmanpour talking about Islam and Muslims in Finland and whether or not people who become Muslim do so because they are marginalized in society. We'll take a news break right now, and when we come back, we will speak with our other guest, Kamal Shakur. Welcome back. Is Muslim conversion a result of being rejected by society or because of some negative experience in society? Or is converting to Islam generated from a deep attraction and an admiration for Islam? Kamal Shakur is from the South American country of Guyana. He is a Muslim missionary, president of the Imam Ali Trust of Guyana, which organizes drives for building mosques and establishing other facilities needed by the Muslim community there. Here is Kamal Shakur. I'd like to welcome Brother Kamal Shakur. Brother Shakur, first of all, I'd like to ask you, how did you become a Muslim? I think our readers or our viewers would love to hear how you became a Muslim.
It's a beautiful story. Before Islam, before embracing this beautiful faith, my life, I was born into a Christian family.
Mm-hmm.
I was brought up as a Christian. And doing normal things as young people would do or young teenagers would do during high school and having fun apart from educating myself. But there was a sense of belonging, and I wanted to be in that belonging, that place. And I always recognized that there was a God. And I wanted to be in the presence of God. So at the age of 18, 19, my life took a turn whereby I was thinking of death. I wanted to die in the presence of those who are righteous people, be among the righteous people in the hereafter. And so the constant reminder of death in my mind, that was a driving force for me. So I began a journey of going through different faith and religion, such as the Mormons, who believe that a prophet was raised in America, been through the Hebrew Israelites.
So you were a Mormon? You had embraced Mormonism?
No, I never embraced it. I just wanted to know what the religion is about. Because I was seeking, because I wanted
to
find
out. So you researched it?
Yes, I researched it. And I've been among the Hebrew Israelites. Mm-hmm. Those are a group of people who believe solely of in the Torah. They do not accept Isa alayhi salam as a person who exists.
That's Jesus.
That's Jesus. Uh-huh. And also they have the Sabbath on Saturday. So I used to go just to see what the religion is about. I used to go to the Sabbath and also take part in the sermons and stuff.
So these Hebrew Israelites, were they considered a member, or were they considered an offshoot or a part of the regular Jewish community, or they were like a different type of...
No, they believe that they are the true Israelites who are taken out of Israel during slavery and taken to a different part of the world. So they are trying to find back the way, the roots, which is Israel. So they're trying to get all black people or Israelites to go back to the nation of Israel and live.
I see.
So, but certain concepts I couldn't accept, such as one of it that really caught me is that the white people are devils, or the white man with blue eyes are devil.
I see.
So I believe that there's a just God, and I don't think that all white people could be in a category of God can create these human beings to be devil. Obviously, in every race and every religion and every sect of life, there are good and bad, but that couldn't really put things together for me. So the journey started off again on a different leg, or a different strive to find out this way of life that I would be comfortable with. So one day I just keep praying to Allah, or praying to God, to show me the way of life, the true way of life that I should live, because I don't want to die in the state that I was, being a person who having girlfriends here, girlfriends there, drinking alcohol, partying. I need a change. So at that stage of my life, the maturity as a man stepped in. I need to take control of my life. And one day my mom said to me, she said, son, why don't you talk to a friend of mine? He's a Muslim. I said, Muslim? I said, I don't want to know about Islam. I don't know about Islam. What are you telling me about? Talk to your friend about Islam. She said, man, you know, he's a good guy. See what's the religion about. So one night I had this dream. And the dream, it was strange because the dream was about Jesus. And Jesus was standing on the other side of the river. And on my right, there was a bridge. So he was calling me to come to him. I had an option or a choice. It's either to go across the bridge or go directly into the water and reach to Jesus. But I decided to go directly. As I entered the water, I woke up. And then, you know, I said, nah, this can't, you know, this is strange. You know, and then I decided, I said to my mom, yo, man, give me the phone number of this Muslim guy. Let me speak to him and see what this religion is about. For some apparent reason that I just had this calling. So I got a number and I called the brother. The brother said, yes, come down, you know, to our center and, you know, take part. So the brother arranged transportation.
And he was a convert himself?
Yes. He arranged transportation for me to go down to the center where the Muslims are gathered. And when I got there, I saw a few brothers and sisters, you know, breaking their fast. And this is in the month of Ramadan.
Right.
So they said to me, it's time to pray. You have a choice to either pray with us, follow the action, or you don't have to. Just, you know, you could sit on a watch. So I decided to follow them and, you know, follow the action. So during that process, I listened to some of the sermons and stuff they were, you know, take part in. I break the fast with them. And I couldn't understand what fasting is really about. So they explained everything to me and stuff like that. And that's when the journey of Islam started for me. And they took me, actually the brother gave me some books to read. And one of the first books he gave me was the spread of Islam. And he gave me a section to read. And I think he was trying to show me how Islam spread in Africa. So I read the chapter and stuff that that's in the book. And then he tried to encourage me to seek more about Islam. I gave me more books, talked to me about the religion and stuff like that. And then Eid, after the month of fasting, they took me to another town where Muslims are celebrating the Eid. So the community from the city of Guyana, attended this Eid festival. And there and then, it struck me more of this is the life that I want to live. The reason is because a lot of youngsters, younger than me, were talking righteousness, talking about God, talking about the simple things that I used to say, well, nah, you know, I don't want to do that because that's boyish or whatever. And the discussion that they had, it was different to the kind of discussion or company that I used to have. The company that I used to have would discuss about how many beers or alcohol that we drank the night before, or which woman we had the night before, you know, and doing the things that is haram or wrong in the eyes of God. And these youngsters were talking about righteousness, talking about, you know, the beauty of life and these kind of things. And then it's like, hey, you know, a light switch on in my head. And then I decide to follow in the path of Islam.
Did you embrace Islam that Eid?
No, I did not embrace Islam on that Eid. The brother said to me, take your time. There's no rush. Islam won't force you to embrace the faith. Whenever your heart feels comfortable, you take that moment. So one day we visit a mosque in Georgetown. And there and then I said to the brothers, I want to embrace the faith. I'm ready to take the oath. They say, you ready to take the Shahada? I said, yeah. And there and then, in the yard of this mosque, I took my Shahada. And this has happened. My journey began in 1996. I started following the religion in February 1996. I took my Shahada the 8th of March of that year. And that's when the journey began.
And you've been on the journey ever since.
I never turned back. I never had any regrets.
Yes.
Because it's a way of life that teaches you how to live properly, how to eat, even how to walk, how to use a toilet, how to clean yourself, how to behave in society. So the mannerism that even attracted me more, because I'm always a calm individual, Islam has made me even more.
Even calmer.
Oh,
even
man.
Cooler. Now, I want to ask you a question. Some people say that people who embrace Islam are people who are lacking something. You know, they lack social acceptance, for example. They lack social position. You know, they are marginalized from their community. If they only had an experience of, let's say, in the case of Christian societies, Christian love, they would not have embraced Islam. Do you see your embracing of Islam reflecting any of these characteristics? And what aspects of yourself might reflect those, or are not similar to those, are different to those?
I think I could probably turn back to the way I was brought up. And I was never of a person who did any kind of thing that is major wrong in the sense of trying to harm someone and stuff like that. So I wasn't really missing or lacking anything because my mom taught me certain values in life. But my concern is that I always wanted to serve God. I wasn't lacking anything as such,
right.
But I just wanted to be on the right path. Because at that age of being 18, you know, that's when some people want, youngsters or youth want to enjoy life. God, they just came out of high school, they want to party, they want to have fun. But that stage in my life, I wanted to turn away from the things that I thought, and I know it in my heart, that is not right. Because I remember as a child, whenever I'm in need, I pray more to God. If I want some new garment or dress, and my mom couldn't afford to buy these garments, I used to pray and ask God, because I wanted to go out with my friends. So I said, pray and ask God, let something happen so I can get this new garment or new shoes. Or if I'm sick and I'm in bed, I can't move, I would pray and ask God, get rid of this pain and suffering from me. After I get these material things, or after I feel better in my body and health, I don't pray anymore. Because I only remember God when I'm in need. And I said, no, this can't be right. I can't be ungrateful to God anymore. So all of these things I start to put together.
I see. So you're becoming a Muslim had very much to do with your internal search for God, your internal search for a way of relating to God, and your internal search for a suitable religion that could reflect that search and yearning.
Yeah, and that's why I read different books from different religions, because I wanted to know, you know, which is the way of life I should choose. Because in Christianity, I remember going to Sunday school or Sunday class every Sunday. And I remember saying to one of my Sunday school teacher, I want to be a preacher. She said, yes, when you grow up, you know, anybody could be a preacher and stuff like that. But I think that, and that was before I even reached the age of 10. So it's something that was within me from a very young age. Because I can't remember ever using the swear word or the F word that people use a lot in the West more than 100 times in my life. I've never been drunk. I used to drink alcohol, but I've never been drunk, because I learned from the drunk man on the street or the drunk men that they're not in control of themselves. I always want to be in control. I've never smoked cigarette or smoked marijuana or weed. I think I've puffed cigarette maybe once or twice, but never entirely smoked a cigarette. And so I always had control. I always try to respect women, because my mom, I love her. And because of the love I have for my mom, make me respect women highly. Even being married to my wife today, I've never even raised my voice or mishandled her. I always treat her with great respect because the way my mom taught me values. So Islam is what even polish or mold my life.
Yeah, polish might be a better word, because it seems you had some very good qualities to begin with.
Yes. Because I remember even having my friends, some of them used to say that, you know, you're too serious. But I think my expression, I wasn't that serious, but my expression, because I always be as a layback person, relax. Don't rush the brush in life. You know, take step by step in life.
You know, when somebody say you're serious, many times they mean you don't like to have fun. Uh-huh. The idea of fun is exactly what you were criticizing. Drinking, womanizing, and that type of
right.
stuff. So when they say you're serious, it tends to mean that most of the time.
You know? Most of the time. So, but the beauty about embracing this faith is that I embrace this faith, that I get to be in the faith of understanding Islam and understanding the companions. And it's so beautiful that I know who the true companions are.
Now, what about the spread of Islam in Guyana? Is Islam spreading rapidly in Guyana? What are the kinds of people who become Muslim?
Islam is spreading rapidly in Guyana. And I think because the simple fact that Guyana need Islam. And because Islam, the Muslims are very and highly respected among society, for the simple fact that we are recognized of doing charitable works, feeding the poor, building homes. And so non-Muslims, like Christians and Hindus, see the works that Muslims are doing in Guyana. Because there's a saying that the Muslims have wealth or money in Guyana. Muslims get into a lot of business. They are business people. And I think it's because they try to spend the money or utilize the money correctively and not to use it in haram stuff. So non-Muslims are observing this. Even as I speak, I can pretty much show that there are a lot of youngsters who want to embrace Islam. A lot of people approach me, non-Muslims, that I love your faith. I love your mannerism. I love the way you conduct yourself. You know, even when I'm moving around with my family, they see the unity and the love that we share because I play with my son. You know, I look at my wife with respect. I take her out and don't have this kind of way that non-Muslims see women as a second class. I walk shoulder to shoulder with my wife. I don't have her behind like all some people think that Islam, the women have to be behind and the men in front. No. So people are seeing these things and they say, hey man, you know, I love your way of life. How can I be a Muslim?
What is the meaning of Muslim?
Muslim are those who submitted or surrendered to the will of God. Islam means submission or surrender. Muslims are those who submitted or surrender to the will of God. Everything that exists in the world is a Muslim. Some people might say, what do you mean by that? Only human beings are Muslim. No. Birds, mountains, trees, animals, anything that exists, anything that Allah Azawajal created, were created to submit to Him, to His will. That is a Muslim. So, a lot of people need to be educated or re-educated about Islam.
Now, becoming a Muslim, does that mean rejecting Christianity?
No. Because even Islam teaches you that the Christians are the people of the book. We should respect them because Isa alayhi salam, who was one of the greatest prophets that walked this earth, is a miracle or the word of God. So being a Muslim doesn't reject Christianity as in the whole or in the context, but it rejects some of the teachings because we were taught to love Isa and his message.
Right.
So, and Isa alayhi salam and all prophets came with a single message, and the single message is the oneness of God.
So then why then you find that in a lot of cases many people criticize Islam, they criticize Islam and they say that Islam is a rejectionist religion, you know, that Islam and Muslims hate Christians and Christianity, and Islam is against people's freedom and so forth. Why is it that people say that Islam is against Christianity?
In the Bible, it teaches you that Islam is the way of life or the life that we should follow. Because even Isa alayhi salam said, if I do not go to the Father, if I do not go to the Father, the Comforter will not come. But if I do go to the Father or return back to Allah or to God, the Comforter will come. Who is the Comforter that Isa or Jesus is speaking about? The Comforter, as I know from the teaching that I got, is Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessing be upon him. Because all prophets and messengers were comforter to the people.
Thank you very much. From these experiences, we can see that it was only after becoming a Muslim that Paula Bahmanpour was marginalized by those who think that religion is inseparable from one's national identity. But soon she became an ambassador for Islam, creating greater understanding of Muslim needs and encouraging a sense of belonging among Muslim immigrants in her country. In the case of Kamal Shakur, he was also profoundly attracted by the clean and moral living of Muslim converts in Guyana and himself became an example of Muslim uprightness that led to the conversion of both his mother and brother to Islam. Neither Paula nor Kamal were marginalized individuals, nor did they come to Islam because of negative experiences in their societies. We want to thank our two guests and look forward to seeing you next week, same time, same channel on Minbar.